Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Opinion Line on Cork's 96 FM.
Kingston, good morning, and thanks for being with us again.
Good morning, PJ. Pleasure.
Now, what is the story, Kingston? Because the report in the Lancet would appear to tell us that, you know, people who are lucky enough to have good, robust health in general and have been fully vaccinated don't really need a booster. Would you agree with that?
I would, actually. I think that article was misrepresented a lot in the media. They, if you read the article carefully, what the people are writing, and two of them were ex-FDA officials, and others were eminent scientists throughout the United States, and the U.S. has taken the view that they're going to boost, you know, most of the population, which is a bit at variance with the rest of the world. The U.K. have decided over 50s, mm-hmm. and of course Ireland has decided only over 80s and over 65s in long-term residential care. I think, you know, the somewhere in between the U.K. and Ireland, I think my personal view would be it should be. I don't think healthy under 60-year-olds, right now need a booster. You know, people that have an adequate immune response and responded well to the vaccine are going to be protected against severe disease, even against the Delta variant. They mightn't be protected against mild disease, and there are some vaccine breakthroughs. And, you know, the latest data we have suggests that about 20% of all the cases we have daily are as a result of vaccine breakthroughs, but a lot of those don't get severe disease. So the reason we want to boost is to stop those vaccine breakthroughs. And they tend to occur in people that haven't responded so well to the vaccine. So people that don't respond so well are the older people where the immune system is weakening a bit as you age, people with, as you said, with immunosuppressive, you know, associated with a disease or associated with a treatment for a disease. So these people definitely do need to be boosted. It would be really advantageous for them to get a third immunization.
Now, we heard a lot during the summer months that Pfizer in particular was aware of what it would need to do to the vaccine to, if you like, take on Delta. Has that happened? Because are we still giving out what you might call the original vaccine, or has any of them been upgraded yet to take on Delta?
Well, that's a very good point. And the answer is that all the vaccines that have been administered are the same as the original vaccine. The companies, including Pfizer, Moderna, and AstraZeneca, and indeed Johnson & Johnson, are all working on modified versions of the vaccine. But these have to be tested and proved by the regulatory agency, and that does take some time. They don't have to go to the same level of stringent, huge phase 3 tests that originally went through, because they're just a slight variation on the original vaccine. But nevertheless, they have to be shown to be safe before they're going to be approved again. So right now, Pfizer and Moderna, for example, what they've done, they've done small phase 3 trials with the original vaccine, where they've given a third dose to people that already got two doses of the same vaccine. And they showed in those trials that they significantly boosted the antibody responses. These are the molecules that protect us from the infection. So 3 to 10-fold higher in people who got the third dose. And that means that, you know, some of the vaccines are struggling to cope with the Delta variant in people that don't respond as well. But if you give those a booster, you make it a much better chance that they will be protected against the Delta variant.
Because there's no doubt that the vaccines are helping with the Delta variant. Are you saying to me there that, again, come back to someone who's in good, robust general health anyway and has a fairly well-functioning immune system in normal times, if they're fully vaccinated, their system can handle Delta? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that some of these do get infected, and
yes.
There are young people who have been fully vaccinated who are getting infected. By and large, these people don't end up in hospital, and that's good news. Whereas, in the past, the older ones might have ended up in hospital. So it does protect against severe disease, and it may not protect against mild disease in everybody. In fact, the efficacy is probably down around 80-something% against even severe disease, mm-hmm. with the Pfizer and lower than that with the AstraZeneca. But against hospitalization, the efficacy is still over 90%.
Okay.
But there still will be a small number, especially the older population that will have got two doses of the vaccine, who may get infected and who may end up in hospital. And that's the reason why we need to use the boosters to stop that.
In the UK, as you mentioned, it's going to be everybody over 50. But I read that depending on what you're getting, you get a full dose of Pfizer, but a small dose of Moderna. What's that about?
Okay, so in the original vaccines that were put on the market from Moderna, the dose was 100 micrograms. That's a measure of the amount of mRNA that was in the vaccine. Whereas for the Pfizer vaccine was 30 micrograms, so about threefold less in the Pfizer vaccine. And the reason for that is sort of, it was based on what the companies had done in the early trials. They tested several doses and they'd hit on a dose which they thought was going to be the most effective. And it's a balance between reactogenicity or side effects versus efficacy in protecting against infections. So you don't want to have the dose too high or you get more side effects, and you don't want it too low or you get less effect in terms of protection. So Pfizer hit on 30 and Moderna hit on 100. And now what Moderna have done, they've had other trials, they've shown that even 50, which is a half the original dose, is just as effective. So that's why they've gone for the lower dose for the booster, which is still higher than the Pfizer dose, which is now 50 versus 30. So I think there's nothing wrong with that. It's prudent. And very often, when you boost a response, you don't need a strong vaccine as when you're giving the primary dose. So it all makes scientific sense.
Because effectively, you're just reminding the immune system, hello, just reminding you.
Exactly, and you're boosting those T
right.
cells and B cells that do the protection, and smaller doses of the vaccine can do it as effectively as a larger dose. But for the primary dose, the bigger the dose, the better.
Yeah. In earlier conversations with us on the Opinion Line, Professor, you told me that you alone in your own inbox were seeing dozens and dozens of different pieces of research every day, which gave you great confidence that science was winning this race, and everything that COVID did, science was working to counteract that. Is the research still at that high level?
Absolutely. I mean, the amount of papers that are coming out on COVID-19 in general, whether it be in vaccines or in terms of treating the disease, is just tremendous. And the ways of treat people who are unfortunate enough to end up in hospital and get severe disease now, the treatment for those is much, much more honed, and the drugs that they're using, it's simple drugs like steroids and antithrombotic drugs that are turning out to be very effective. And even some of the drugs that were used to treat arthritis and other autoimmune diseases have been tested. Some of them have worked reasonably well, but others not so well. So the treatment for the disease has actually improved as well as of course the vaccine. And the vaccine has been the huge success story. I mean, it's unimaginable that in 18 months we would effectively have controlled this pandemic through vaccination. I mean, it is an extraordinary achievement in science.
Mm-hmm. When you found yourself in hospital in the early days of this pandemic, the virus could ravage your body and do untold damage. And we all know of someone who unfortunately passed away, but not because of the virus itself, because of the damage the virus did to their body. We're much more effective now at preventing that damage, are we?
Well, I mean, one of the big issues that hasn't really been resolved yet is this long COVID, which is the sort of the remnants of the infection that people have. And it's, the older people, it can be pretty severe, very severe, and it can last for well over a year. And in younger people, it's milder, but it can still be there. A small proportion, even children the age of 4 to 12 can have a small proportion that can have symptoms that persist for more than 2 months. So it is a debilitating disease, and it's not something that you really want to get, no matter what age you are and no matter how healthy you are.
Are we any closer to a vaccine for children then?
Yeah, I mean, the vaccines are being tested right now. The same vaccines that are used in adults have been tested in the younger children. It's obviously been given to the 12-plus-year-olds, but it's also been tested in the 5 to 12-year-olds. And it's highly effective, it seems, in terms of inducing antibodies. We don't know yet the efficacy and prevalence for in terms of protection against disease, but it's very likely to work very effectively in that age group.
Because I guess realistically, it's where one place that it is rampant at the moment, Professor, is in the schools, and people
absolutely
are worried about that, you know?
If you look at the numbers of cases right now, in the Irish system, in the last 2 weeks, there have been 3,500 cases amongst the 5 to 12-year-olds. That's the highest number in any age group. Around accounts for around 18% of all the cases. So that number, that percentage is going to increase as the other populations are vaccinated. So you'll see the dominant numbers of cases will be in the 5 to 12-year-olds in a few weeks' time.
And is it, again, you mentioned long COVID, is it dismissive to say, well, children don't get sick, so that's okay?
It is dismissive, I'm afraid. Some children get quite sick, a small proportion. And then a big UK study done recently showed that 2% of children have symptoms that persist for more than 2 months that get infected, and 4% have symptoms that persist for more than 1 month. And a lot of them are out of school, of course, and then their education is affected as a result. So you know, it's not a trivial disease, even in that age group.
Question has come in from a listener, Professor, on boosters, and it's a good one. If you got AstraZeneca or if you got Johnson & Johnson, what's the story with a booster? Will you get a Pfizer or a Moderna?
You would get an mRNA vaccine, a Pfizer or a Moderna. After some reluctance, it has to be said, and people like myself, you know, making noise in the media, that, you know, the need to boost with mRNA vaccines, the NIAC have decided that everybody will be boosted with an mRNA vaccine, regardless, eventually, if they're going to get a booster, regardless of whether it was an mRNA or a virus vector vaccine that they got on the first round of immunization.
And
which is good news, because of the boosting effect, and the studies in the UK and other places have shown that the boosting effect of the mRNA on top of the adenovirus vector really worked very effectively.
Yes, heterologous vaccination.
Yeah.
I will eventually get my head around that word. I've been trying it for months. Initially, there was talk that we might have to, for vulnerable people, work this into the annual flu jab for many years going forward. What's the thinking on that now?
Yeah, I think that's quite likely. I mean, you know, if you look at flu, I mean, flu varies each year, and we need an updated vaccine each year to take care of the latest variant. I think it's very likely that COVID-19 will be the same. We would probably roll it in with the, you'll see it rolled in probably with the annual flu vaccination. Hopefully, you know, a year from now, we won't be having this conversation, because COVID-19 will be part of the sort of the annual seasonal infection that we worry about, and we'll just have a vaccine that'll deal with it.
That's the principle of endemic, isn't it?
Yeah. And you know, it'll just become a disease that is another one that we, you know, on the list of diseases. But the really good thing is it's one of those diseases, unlike something like HIV or hepatitis C, where we don't have vaccines and are still an issue, especially HIV. You know, we have now a virus that hopefully, you know, once everybody that is eligible for vaccination gets vaccinated, it'll be under control. And then the developing world has to be vaccinated, and that's the next big step to eliminate it, not just in Ireland and Europe, but globally.
And the WHO is very strong on that at the moment. You know, it's kind of saying, look, forget your boosters, except for the absolutely vulnerable. Get the whole world vaccinated rather than boosting those in rich countries.
Yeah, I mean, there's a very good case for that. I think, personally, I think that the resources need to be given to countries like India. India have a fantastic biotech industry, pharma industry, and they can make millions of doses of vaccines if given the resources. So I think that's what needs to happen. They need to be resourced to make, and China can do it as well, and even in Brazil. So these countries need to be resourced to make loads of doses.
Did I read somewhere in the summer, Professor, that actually India's got one of the biggest industries in the world for production of vaccine doses?
They do. Wow. There's a company, there's two major companies, Bharat Biotech and the Serum Institute of India, which have a massive capacity, and they've even bought recently into the European market. They've acquired vaccine manufacturing sites in Europe with a view to getting into the European market. So they're that far advanced. I mean, people think that India is a backward country. In terms of the biotech, it certainly is not, and areas of it are very advanced, and they have really got the wherewithal and the technology to make vaccines very effectively.
Two more brief questions for you before I let you go. First of all, the horror story, and I guess you could watch enough documentaries and enough movies, the horror prospect of a mutation that is vaccine proof and much more dangerous.
Yeah.
Is that still out there?
It is, unfortunately. There's a variant called the Mu variant, which is now in 44 countries, including Ireland, small numbers here. But in South America, it's spreading rapidly. In Colombia, it accounts for over 40% of all the cases. This variant is a version of a further version of the Brazilian and similar to the South African variant. And if people remember, they may not, that when the trials were done in South Africa against where the South African variant, which is now called the Beta variant, was circulating, that the AstraZeneca vaccine only had 10% efficacy against that variant, and South Africa stopped using the AstraZeneca vaccine as a result. So that variant, the Mu variant, is a more insidious version of the South African and Brazilian variants. So it is really going to be more tricky for the vaccine to deal with than the Delta variant. Now, the good news is it's not as transmissible as the Delta, and that leads us to suggest that it won't push out the Delta variant, that the Delta variant will still dominate.
Okay. And lastly, this time last year, mid-September last year, NPHET were very worried about the situation that was developing with rising case numbers. And people like you and I, when we're having conversations like this, we're very worried about the winter ahead. I think we can feel a lot safer and sleep a lot sounder in our beds now, Professor.
I think so, yeah. I mean, look, the vaccines have been tremendously effective. There are still some unfortunate people who have been double vaccinated who've got infected, but by and large, most of those will not end up in hospital. The others that are not vaccinated are taking a serious risk about not being vaccinated because you're putting yourself at risk of getting the infection and ending up in hospital. So that's for the older cohort that decided not to get vaccinated, and indeed the younger as well. So you know, my advice to everybody is go out and get vaccinated. And for the younger cohorts, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what the uptake will be like finally in the secondary schools. Hopefully that'll be high. It's looking very good at the moment. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're heading for 90% of the entire population over 12 vaccinated. This is one of the best in the world. So Ireland has really done a fantastic job, both the health authorities and the public, in terms of buying into the vaccine, because they see the benefit of it. And it is clear to everybody that the vaccine is the solution, along with, of course, the traditional methods of social distancing, wearing masks, etc. Mm. But if it wasn't for the vaccine, we would not be where we are now in terms of looking forward to a sort of a normal life again.
All right. Listen, thanks as always for being with us on the Opinion Line. Professor of Experimental Immunology at Trinity College, Kingston Mills. Thank you, Kingston. Always a pleasure to have you on the programme.
Cork's 96 FM.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.